Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of the appropriation bill tabled by the Honourable Prime Minister a few days ago. The theme of this bill, of this budget, consolidating gains, developing a world-class destination, and enhancing human resource capacity. It's consistent, Mr. Speaker, with the philosophy of this Labour administration. Bread, freedom, and justice for all. Out of the benefits derived from all the developmental processes, Mr. Speaker, we are seeking to ensure that everyone in the society can benefit from the gains that we are going to have from those developmental processes. And this has been well articulated by several colleagues of mine who have spoken before me. Mr. Speaker, only a government with a social conscience will undertake massive capital projects, give incentives to all the contributing sectors of the economy, and still find ways to look after the less fortunate amongst us. And we can cite the example of the textbook rental program, something in there for pensioners, the slope stability management program that we're going to have in the Castries Basin, the relocation of the depressed communities of Conway and so on. It's about giving dignity to the people in those depressed communities. That is the philosophy of this government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we hear about borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. But Mr. Speaker, who really benefits from the borrowing that is taking place? We hear that the government has neglected agriculture in favor of tourism and so on. Mr. Speaker, the borrowing that took place many years ago to construct the Bodley Correctional Facility, it's there for all to see. Today it is a model project for several other regional governments and countries. We just saw recently the problems in Barbados, and now Barbados is modeling on what St. Lucia has done. And it is going to cost so much more. But you see, sir, it is a vision of a government, and as my colleague from Supra said, it is about creating the social peace. Then we have to pay for that social peace. Mr. Speaker, we borrow. Yes, you see the work going on. People were complaining about the highways and the problems on the roads. We had strikes in the valley about bad roads. The government has to find the money to fix it. Downtown, Mr. Speaker, Bridge Street, and the Honorable Minister for Communications and Works, sir, stopped to tell us last night about the layers and layers that caused the flooding in Castries. That was, you could have measured them. For every new layer was a new election. But it's about strategic planning and strategic management. And the Honorable Minister for Communications and Works must be applauded for his vision and his management of the works process program in St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, on Monday the 18th of April, the Barbados Nation, sir, had on its front page about the new routes, and they were modeling on what is taking place on Bridge Street, sir. Minister of Communications and Works, and they were modeling on what is taking place, what C.O. Williams is doing in St. Lucia, and the work that the Minister for Communications and Works is doing, the new technology that is being brought, and the new models of roads construction. Right there, it has started. This minister works under the St. Lucia Labour Party, sir, and we are borrowing to do that, sir. Mr. Speaker, I've heard people talking about, we have just, I think it was the member for Miku North, that we have just allowed the supermarkets to take over and the farmers cannot sell their produce. But it is far from the truth, Mr. Speaker. Far from the truth. He must ask, or if he wants information, so he can always come to my ministry And my staff in there are always willing, and even myself, to give him the information he needs to know about it. Because the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has been working closely with other agencies such as CADI, AICA, the FAO, in training our farmers to see the opportunities and the linkages between agriculture, tourism, and the new sectors in the economy, sir. And Mr. Speaker, those farmers are now able to trade directly with the supermarkets, and we have taught them about standards. Because today, Mr. Speaker, when you deal with supermarkets and you enter the food business, people speak about traceability. You want to be able to trace back where these products come from. You want to know about agricultural health and food safety issues. And these are the things that we are doing, sir. And the supermarkets, you ask the farmers of the St. Lucia Banana Corporation, and they announce it every Monday night, you hear the program, where they tell you about the programs where the farmers are certified, they have an ID card, and they have certain benefits to be derived when they trade directly with the supermarkets. Those are the things that the changes that are taking place in this economy, sir. Mr. Speaker, I listened to the Honourable Member for Miku South, and he was talking about cost of inputs. And so I will deal with that a little more. But the point I want to highlight to you, sir, is that the government of St. Lucia does not control those factors of production. Mr. Speaker, listen to what the Economist newspaper had to say on the 4th of April, 2005. Last week, and that will be, I will leave the document and make it a paper of the House. Last week, Goldman Sachs released a report predicting that oil prices may stay above $50 a barrel for several years. Oil prices obliged by jumping. On Monday, April 4th, light crude hit $58 for the first time ever. Is that the St. Lucia Labour Party or Kenny Anthony? So, when we are going to import the fertilizers and all the other inputs that we require to produce our agricultural commodities, we do not produce those commodities here. They got to be shipped out of the United Kingdom, out of the rest of Europe, out of the United States. And, of course, shipping costs have gone up because of the fuel prices, sir. So it is not fair for these members on the opposite side to come and bluff the farmers again. The time for bluffing, sir, is over. It is we are dealing with action. And I'm getting down to the root of it, sir. Mr. Speaker, you know, we talk about, I listened to the member for Beaufort North again. And as I say, sorry, Miku North. Who was, I'm sorry that he's not here this morning because I came prepared to give him a little lecture. Because, you know, some agricultural economists, we have some things that we could have taught him a few lessons. But there's a saying which goes, Mr. Speaker, that if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, like the Honorable Prime Minister did last Tuesday, then they come here to baffle the people with what we call BS. This is exactly what the leaders, all the four leaders on the opposite side, have been doing. Well, the two leaders then. And he came preaching about, or pontificating about the Lewis theory of development. And Mr. Speaker, if I will not spend the time now going and talk about the Lewis series of development, because Sir Arthur Lewis did a lot of work which has been well recognized on talking about plantation agriculture and how the development of the economies would take place when the labor force, the excessive labor force, would be moving into what we call then industrialization by invitation, those sorts of things. But he can go and read up for himself. Then sir, we had many years ago when the St. Lucia Labor Party, I was a small boy at St. Mary's College then, but I used to follow the House. When Professor George Beckford, who headed, the Land Reform Commission in St. Lucia. The Labour Party is always consistent on agriculture, you know, sir. We were the ones who had to deal with this St. Lucia Labour Party before my time, in 1979 to 82, that introduced Professor George Beckford to deal with the Land Reform Commission. And today people have title for properties because all of that followed with the land registration program. That was designed under the St. Lucia Labour Party. And Mr. Will, the honourable member for Miku North comes here telling people, coming here to tell people about the theories of Professor George Beckford. And he tells us, and one of the questions that Professor Beckford had in there in his book, Persistent Poverty, Underdevelopment in Plantation Economies of the Third World. The question which must seek to answer is why? Why have the plantation economies been left behind? I will leave it there, Mr. Speaker, because the honorable member for Miku North, sir, can do his own reading because he's very good at doing that. Agriculture's true contribution to the economy, sir, and people have been bashing agriculture. He say, pack agriculture, keep back. But Mr. Speaker, we hear about the true agriculture's contribution to agriculture. Yes, indeed, there have been declines. But you must ask yourself, why do we have all those declines in agriculture? Agriculture does not take place in a vacuum. Agriculture is deemed to be most times as the factory without a roof. So we're exposed to all the elements, all the vagaries of production. And Mr. Speaker, last year, you know the Minister for Works told us about the problems he had with road construction because of rain for about 18 months, non-stop. You ask the farmers how difficult it was to plan the programs, and most of those farmers do not have greenhouses. And so how could they have been able to produce the levels of production of the previous year? So there are lots of risks involved in agriculture, and there are lots of problems that we face with agriculture. And the traditional accounting methods that we use with measuring the true contribution of to agriculture to GDP and to the rest of the economy, sir. I think the time has come, and our ministry will be working with the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation in Agriculture, an institution that has worked with several other countries in Latin America and the Caribbean in designing what is called a social accounting matrix, so that we can go out there and capture the true effects that agriculture has and the multiplier effect of agriculture in those rural communities, those coastal communities. And this year, Mr. Speaker, our ministry will be undertaking such work. Mr. Speaker, I don't want to continue with the litany of pessimism of which were articulated here by the agents of Diabolos, Mr. Speaker, who are busy out there trying to poke the children of the light. You know that radiant light that we have, sir, the perpetual light from above, and who are trying to poke our people towards this non-renewable light of a fossil fuel. They have been preaching about nails in the coffin of agriculture, Mr. Speaker. But having listened to the Honorable Prime Minister's delivery, sir, can one say that $20 million, more than $20 million in the capital estimates, is a nail in the coffin of agriculture, Mr. Speaker?
No.
But you will well understand, sir, that the king of darkness thrives on fear and coffins. But the children of the light have no fear, Mr. Speaker. We see the light and we gravitate towards the opportunities, sir. Our government is about hope and about delivery, and we have a track record of delivery, Mr. Speaker. The Economic Review has the information. 3.6% growth. Deny it if you wish. But as a good friend of mine in La Clary would say, the facts remain. It is there. It is there all around St. Lucia. This is the same government, Mr. Speaker, which was given 2 months after the 1997 election. Then it was revised and we were given 2 years. which became two terms. And so it looks very likely that it will be three. And still we continue to deliver. And still we continue to deliver, Mr. Speaker. Still we continue on the path of delivery and good governance, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, let us examine the estimates. Volume number 2, page 497, Mr. Speaker. And you can see under the capital estimates, Mr. Speaker, COCO rehabilitation, and this, you know, Mr. Speaker, the government has allocated $104,500 towards COCO rehabilitation. I'm going there in a while, sir. And just last week, I was down in the Supresh Wazelle area where you have a lot of its cocoa production. And we have a very good young man who is working with the farmers there in this cocoa rehabilitation program. And a lot of that information is not necessarily captured as agricultural production in the official statistics as agriculture, because it's the transformation that is taking place in the economy. I will give you an example, sir. We have a gentleman who has an operation, the tourist agro-tourism project. And this gentleman tells me he's rehabilitated his field because he has his plantation tours. People see them dance the cocoa and everything. And he produces cocoa sticks, Mr. Speaker. And it is well wrapped and it's in a gift shop. That goes for about $2. That does not go through the official statistics as agriculture. But this is agricultural production within the tourism. These are the real connections that are taking place. And when the Honorable Minister for Tourism said that we were getting tourism out to the people, and the good work of Honorable Member for Babonow in a previous life, that is the sort of changes that have taken place where people have been able to add value to agricultural commodities and sell them directly within the tourism industry. But they are captured as tourism and not as agriculture. And so, we do have a lot of our farmers selling directly, and this is why, you see, previously, a lot of the information came through the St. Lucia Agriculturalist Association, which was the only agency that dealt with the export of cocoa. Today, many farmers up on a Express de Zeal or one of the ferries go over to Martinique, and they trade with these products. These are not captured, and this is why our ministry is seeking to find ways of capturing all of that information, because it's lost. But people are gainfully employed, sir, within agriculture, and this government has not killed agriculture, because it's this government that has created the opportunities for people to increase their travel between the islands, for example, Martinique, sir. The coconut leaf mites, again, we have a provision for supporting the control of that mite. And again, our quarantine department has been doing a lot of work with external agencies in handling those situations. But you see, now everybody's blaming the decline in the production of coconut oil and other coconut related products on this mite. While there is certainly an effect on the industry, I am still of the view, Mr. Speaker, that there are several other factors affecting the industry. Because a lot of the plants that we have today have almost expired their usefulness or have gone past beyond their optimum levels of production, so that yields are declining. Today, because many persons have moved left the banana industry, the sort of intercropping and the benefits the coconut plants had from the fertilizers utilized for bananas, they are not benefiting from that now. And you have the big problem, sir, of farm labor. Not only is it difficult to find farm labor, but you have problems. A major problem in agriculture is that of low labor productivity, Mr. Speaker. And then we also have the problem of an aging farming population. A lot of those farmers, their children are no longer in agriculture. Their children find themselves in all the other professions but agriculture. So who is going to go collect the coconuts to husk, do the husking and to produce the copra to take it down to Sufre? Those are the problems that we have and why we are seeing some of these declines in production. Mr. Speaker, another challenge is that we have a thriving coconut water industry. So the figures we would have seen about exports of copra and coconut oil is being challenged by this thriving coconut water industry. And that's an informal sector, sir. It's not captured in the official statistic, because if a fellow comes down near the marketplace with his pickup with 300 coconuts every day, I mean, who really captures that information to know how many coconuts he has sold or delivered? What is the tonnage that was sold? Well, that too, Mr. Speaker. Might be from a farmer in cul-de-sac. The decline in non-traditional trade in agriculture, sir. So all of that I have tried to explain briefly. But then, sir, we have heard a lot from the other side about the challenges of the banana industry. And they have not just been challenging or suggesting the real challenges that we face, but they are telling us that the government of St. Lucia has killed the banana industry, Mr. Speaker. But sir, again, if we go to the economic review of last year, where is my spot? The social and economic review. Yes, sir. And you'd follow the levels of banana production during that period, Mr. Speaker. And people tell you that banana production in 1995 was 100,000 tons, and today it is 43,000 tons. But we cannot just take those statistics in isolation. Mr. Speaker, in 1994, St. Lucia produced 90,000 tons of bananas. Dominica produced 42,000 tons of bananas. But if we fast forward and get into 2000 and so on, we will see equal declines in production by all those territories. That is consistent throughout all the territories. Some countries even worse. But St. Lucia has still maintained its percentage, over 50% of production, almost consistently throughout all the demise of all the other territories, Mr. Speaker. And the figures are there, but people take the figures and seek to distort the information. And this cannot be allowed. And so there are those persons who will wish to continue to languish in the nostalgia of the green gold era of the 1980s. But there are real issues, Mr. Speaker. There are real issues. So is there an explanation, Mr. Speaker, by the opposition for the simultaneous decline in all the territories? And I say no, Mr. Speaker, because this is perhaps too complicated for them to understand. Mr. Speaker, while we recorded a 25% increase in banana production last year, over 2003 figures, we are not yet out of danger of our ever-volatile market, Mr. Speaker. Listen to the headlines out of Europe. And I want members to hear those things, because you see, people sit here and just say things and cannot substantiate them. You see? Mr. Speaker, Fresh Info, a trade fruit magazine of the United Kingdom, has as the smart price lunacy. And I'll give you a little excerpt of what it says. But it is the banana price that is probably the most sensitive. It marks almost 40% price deflation since 2000, when bananas were on sale at 180 a kilo, and is a 12% drop on the 74 retail price point for those loose bananas in the store. Banana prices continue to drop by the supermarkets who have their own supermarket wars. Another headline, bananas hit supply glitch. And it tells you again of the price wars that are taking place between Tesco, Asda, Sainsbury's, Marks and Spencer's and these companies in the United Kingdom. Then, Mr. Speaker, you have the banana trade war looms again, for whom the trade rules stole. And it goes on and on, Mr. Speaker, telling us of the challenges that we face in the United Kingdom market with the changes that are taking place with international trade. The record of this government on this issue is well documented, and the contribution of this Labour government is manifested all over St. Lucia. And if you drive through the valleys, Mr. Speaker, you will see the work of the Banana Emergency Recovery Unit, the Biru, with the new varieties of tissue culture that have been introduced in Canel, in the Cul-de-Sac Valley, in Roseau Valley, in Marquis. The work is there for all to see. The new irrigation systems. Right now, Mr. Speaker, if you go to Roseau, the 27 farms that are connected to the system are all being irrigated because we had the vision of putting this irrigation system in place so that we're not dependent on rain-fed agriculture, Mr. Speaker. You go down to Canals and see for yourself. The IRDCs that we have put in place. But did they have the vision and the fortitude to diversify the economy of St. Lucia as initiated under the leadership of our Prime Minister, sir? They didn't. They never cared because they always believed that it was going to be all right in the morning, Mr. Speaker. And our friends will take care of us. Mr. Speaker, we made those decisions analyzing the information that was available. And I will ask you to permit me, Mr. Speaker, to read something, and I will, that a cabinet conclusion of 1994, Mr. Speaker. Terms of reference of a committee appointed by cabinet to proceed with the accelerated restructuring of the banana industry. Cabinet approved, that was in January 1994, and you all know who was Prime Minister then. Cabinet approved the following terms of reference for the committee appointed to proceed with the accelerated restructuring of the banana industry and among some of the things that were to be undertaken. To form a corporate entity with the farmers, government and the St. Lucian public involved as shareholders of the new company, which is exactly what the St. Lucian Labour Party did. And they said that we kill the industry because we commercialize or we corporatize it. This is what they were supposed to have done. They never did. They did not have what it took to do it, the intestinal fortitude to make those decisions, sir. You had to make those bold decisions because otherwise, this economy would have been worse than it is today. It would have been in a terrible condition. Today we are supported by the other pillar in the economy, which is tourism. And today the tourism door opens up opportunities for our farmers to trade with the hotels. This is what is going on, Mr. Speaker. They took the decisions then to do it. They never did. And they tell us that we ruined the industry. But we do not control the prices in the UK market. Mr. Speaker, the tariff-only regime. The tariff-only regime. But before I go to that, Mr. Speaker, just another little crude statistic I want to give you about levels of efficiency in the banana industry. In 1996, we had about some 8,000 active banana producers. That is persons who sold almost on a fortnightly basis to the Banana Growers Association. 8,000 growers produce about 105,000 tons. That is an average of about 13 tons per producer. Today, admittedly, the production is at 42,326 tons last year. With 1,500 growers, we were still able to average 28 tons per grower. Just check out, Mr. Speaker, the yield per grower and check out the levels of efficiency. Just a crude statistic for your information, Mr. Speaker. Those are the things that, the sort of things that we have to do. And do not try to work on people's emotions and try to turn back the time, the hand of the clock, and say that the government killed the industry, because the government does not control the market forces. Those are the changes that government has to make. You compare what goes on in St. Vincent and the Grenadines or in Dominica. Last year, in June, when we attended the International Banana Conference, some of our farmers were part of the delegation, and they could not believe what they were hearing, what was taking place in some of the other territories, which our friends in the other territories, Mr. Speaker. Because we had made the bold, taken the bold initiatives, we had made the bold decisions to do what we did in 1998, so that the farmers had full control over their destiny. You asked, Mr. Speaker, the fair trade producers, and I saw recently that one of those producers was honored by the Ministry of Social Transformation, or I think it was Gender Relations, for the work that they have been doing. And these persons give testimony on television about the benefits of being in control of their banana business themselves, and the premium that they get by producing fair trade bananas, Mr. Speaker. There's a premium on top of that, which is to go towards social programs, so that they're able to make contributions to their communities, to help them in building daycare centers, to build in footpaths and so on. That is what is going on, Mr. Speaker. Not people coming and tell you about, in 1980, we did 100,000 tons, and then there was so much money flowing. Why didn't we use that kind of money to build a new prison and to build the new highways that we had to build in those days when the money was flowing?
Yeah.
What did we do, Mr. Speaker?
Absolutely.
Mr. Speaker, it is imperative that I inform the Honorable House of the current situation with the tariff-only regime. On January 31st, 2005, the European Commission formally notified the World Trade Organization of its intention to impose a single tariff of 230 euros. That's a most favored trading nation tariff of 230 euros per ton in place of the current dual tariffs of 75 euros within the quota and 680 euros above the quota, which applies to the Latin America. At the ACP and CARICOM, our position, our common position, is for a tariff of no less than 275 euros. And we are sticking firmly to this position, Mr. Speaker, because we believe, and this is what we want to do, is to continue to trade. And what is being proposed to us is to compromise our position so that we will continue to get aid. We do not want to just get aid, Mr. Speaker. We want our people to continue to trade. Those are the things that have taken place in Europe. It is not Kenny Anthony that is setting the 230 euros for us to be able to get our fruit into the UK. On March 30th, Mr. Speaker, the Latin American countries of Colombia, Costa Rica, Panama, Honduras, and Guatemala made formal requests to the WTO for arbitration, because the Latin Americans are vehemently opposed to the proposed tariff of 230 euros per ton. They claim that they would lose too much of their market share. Mr. Speaker, the Latin American producers control more than 63% of the pre-enlargement EU market and provide virtually all the bananas going to the EU's new members, the new 10 member states in Europe. The Latin Americans control all of that market, sir. They suggest that the only chance of survival is if the tariff is set at no more than 75 euros. That's the reality, Mr. Speaker. And there is much speculation and uncertainty as to what the outcome will be. There is no fixed, because, Mr. Speaker, there is no fixed WTO procedure for arbitration of this kind, especially with third parties such as ourselves, who have a direct interest in the outcome. It is a dispute that has again arisen between the Latin Americans and the European Union. We are just a third party in that process, Mr. Speaker. An authority on the European Union affairs, Mr. David Jessop, who is the director of the Caribbean Council, on April 8th of this year, suggested that if all goes well, or all goes according to plan, Mr. Speaker, an arbitrator should be appointed by the end of April 2005. An arbitrator decision, therefore, on the new tariff must be made within 90 days, that is by the end of July 2005. If the outcome favors the Latin Americans, it could have devastating consequences for us all, Mr. Speaker. This is why, sir, we have as a nation, and we must, as a nation, Mr. Speaker, all of us around this table, sir, must rally with our farmers and must rally with our diplomatic missions in Europe to do the best to safeguard the livelihoods of the several thousand families, not only in St. Lucia, but in the rest of the Caribbean region who depend on this banana trade, Mr. Speaker. And I challenge the opposition to continue to give that support, or to give that support which they have not been given. And the Prime Minister has challenged the opposition and offered them to travel to Europe, to the UK. Nobody has taken on the challenge to go and see it for themselves what is taking place there. And I throw the challenge again, Mr. Speaker, because there is no room for politics in this matter. There is no room for the nostalgic political overtures, Mr. Speaker. The reality is here. The reality of globalization, Mr. Speaker, and trade liberalization is right here, now. And this is what we have to deal with. And people cannot continue to come to the house and bluff people and believe that a savior, a messiah will come, and that we will be able to remove all the barriers that have been put to trade in Europe. We cannot. It is not possible. And we have to be real, and we have to stop the bluffing. International trade, Mr. Speaker, is not just about business and economics. It's about people's lives, sustainability of livelihoods, access to basic services, and importantly, Mr. Speaker, the social peace that we are all calling for. What we want, Mr. Speaker, is a fair system to trade. And I know my good friend from Soufrière has been working at the ACP level with the European Union, with the parliamentarians, so that we can do all the lobbying that we can, so that we can try to save this banana, vital banana industry. But we cannot sit there, Mr. Speaker, and do nothing. We do not want to depend on aid. And I'm urging, sir, the Honorable Minister for External Affairs, when they have the next WTO ministers meeting in Hong Kong later this year, that he will articulate our position even further, so that we can do the best we can to save our vital banana industry. Mr. Speaker, this government does not sit idly and hope that it will be all right in the morning. We plan and we take action. This is why we have been advocating agricultural diversification. In the Prime Minister's address, Mr. Speaker, he alluded to the agricultural diversification program. And Mr. Speaker, this program is intended to help our farmers to continue to find new ways of doing business. Even within the banana industry, sir, we have the Viru, and because there's tremendous demand for ripened bananas, and there's a thriving trade in ripened bananas in St. Lucia, in the hotels, and we're trying to encourage that in the schools. And so later this year, sir, the Banana Recovery Unit will be beginning a program in a few schools in St. Lucia by delivering a few boxes of ripe bananas a day. So that we're also promoting healthy lifestyles within the schools and encouraging the parents to get a ripe banana in the lunch kit so that the children can begin to learn the healthy lifestyles, Mr. Speaker, and to consume what we produce. Because we cannot be out there fighting with people to buy our bananas, and we ourselves are not consuming them, Mr. Speaker. There are opportunities right here, Mr. Speaker. There are opportunities right here in this region for the expansion of the banana trade. It is not only for the export into Europe, we also must examine the possibilities that we have here. And the diversification unit will look and work closely with the Bureau in doing some of that. Diversification, Mr. Speaker, it's more than just setting crop-specific production targets in annual five-year plans. It is a process of change over time, Mr. Speaker. It is not, and there are no quick fixes in diversification, because it is about people who have been used to trading in a banana industry where they got paid every week, every fortnight, and the adjustments that people now have to make when trading with a supermarket or an hotel, and the waiting period before you get paid. You may have a billing period of, say, 21 days. In some cases, it has gone as far as 90 days. And people have serious cash flow problems. And we at our ministry are working closely with the farmers and other agencies, the financial institutions, to find ways that we can be able to assist the farmers in better managing those challenges of the cash flow problems because of the waiting period. But that does not mean to say that people should not look for the opportunities that exist within that sector. So that it is not just about it, the diversification program must be demand driven. And some of the problems that we have had is that people want to get into doing other programs or undertaking other enterprises, but without the research and without the information. And so we have had a lot of projects failing for those reasons. And for the same reason, it then has a domino effect on the banking system, so that the banks are now very risk averse because of the failure of those projects and the inability of the people to meet their commitments to the banks in paying back those loans. And the banks have a very high rate of delinquencies. But we believe, Mr. Speaker, that everything must be done by all the sectors to help to keep our rural communities engaged in meaningful ways that they can sustain their livelihoods within agriculture, because there's still the opportunities. And this is some of the work the Diversification Agency will be undertaking.
The Honourable Member has finished 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
So, Mr. Speaker, our ministry, through the St. Lucia Agricultural Diversification Agency, will be the catalyst for that reform. We will do so by aligning ourselves with the private sector, with a common mission to change the way we operate and to redesign how we produce and how we distribute food. And we have started doing that by working closely with ICA, with the FAO, with CADI, the program includes a number of training modules towards the certification of the farmer. That is what we have been doing, and helping to build the capacity of our farmers to understand what the supermarkets require, what the hotels require, and what we must do so that we can get into those supermarkets and the other sectors. By doing the good agricultural practices, by ensuring that we meet the quality standards, we work with the Bureau of Standards, Mr. Speaker, so that we certify our farmers. So the change, Mr. Speaker, is not a destination, and there are no quick fixes in agriculture. We need to attract new investors into agriculture. Traditionally, a lot of our business persons started off business. And if you do the history, Mr. Speaker, you will find a lot of the persons who own a lot of the commercial activities around Castries or around St. Lucia had a base in agriculture. Over the years, a lot of those people moved out and got into the distribution business. But we have to find ways, and this is what our agency will seek to do, is to work closely with those persons so that they can invest in agriculture that can open up the opportunities for our farmers to sell their produce, and we can add value to them. We cannot believe that agriculture will just be about the days until a banana boat or somebody talks about agriculture, it is for export only. Agriculture is not just for export only. As I said earlier, it is a strategic asset we have to produce for ourselves, because the lessons of Grenada after Ivan are there for us to remember all the time. And those who remember, of us who remember Hurricane Allen will remember the implications when we do not grow for ourselves what we consume. So the Agricultural Diversification Agency will seek to create jobs in agricultural industry, new capital investment in the agricultural industry, agricultural product market and development and expansion, diversification and expansion of production, processing and distribution of agricultural products, the commercial application of new technologies or practices related to agricultural products. For example, Mr. Speaker, just imagine if you were driving into the valley and you see so many persons would have converted into the greenhouse agriculture. That is the sort of thing we're trying to do. And a lot of young persons don't want to engage in the sort of perceived drudgery of agriculture. But if we can get them engaged in the new technologies of using greenhouses and hydroponics, they may be more inclined. So what we are looking to do is to set up those incubator systems that we will train those persons. We will have the technical people working closely with them. And so that all the way from planning right through to getting financing and all the support mechanisms they require, they're going to get that right through the program. Now, sir, there was a situation where I think during one of the presentations by a member opposite, and I think it was again the member for Miku North, who suggested that this government was doing everything to a particular producer of chicken, and that because he was not a supporter of the government, that the government was victimizing him. Because, Mr. Speaker, when a lot of people in business in St. Lucia today, when they start up their businesses and things are well, they tell you the government has nothing to do with it. Anytime the business crashes on them for whatever reason, it is the government that victimized them, and the government is doing nothing to support them. Mr. Speaker, this particular business enterprise, Eden Enterprises, Mr. Speaker, Eden Meats. When I first went to the Ministry of Agriculture, one of the first meetings I held, sir, was to bring in all the importers of meats and supermarket people who were complaining about the poor quality of product from that particular enterprise. Now, Mr. Speaker, I did not want to come here to speak about a matter like this when the individual cannot defend himself in here, Mr. Speaker. But it was raised, and I heard it again today, this morning in the news, that the government was victimizing this particular individual because he does not support the government. Mr. Speaker, I will give you the facts as it is given to me from the veterinary division of the ministry. Because, sir, we brought in the public health authorities in the Ministry of Health. We brought in the veterinary people in my ministry, all the technical people from the Ministry of Commerce, and we brought in the importers and other distributors of this food because we are concerned about the safety, food and health safety in this country, sir. The same standard that applies for whatever comes into this country. And I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, that the staff in the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Agriculture at those ports are very vigilant and very concerned about the quality of products we get here. So, Mr. Speaker, the report says, inspection and wholesomeness certification, Eden Meats. One, the inspection and wholesomeness certification program of the veterinary livestock divisions of the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is part of a collaborative and integrated approach implemented with the Environmental Health Department of the Ministry of Health and the St. Lucia Bureau of Standards. The veterinary division normally carries out anti-mortem and post-mortem inspections at all processing plants for the issuance of inspection certificates. A follow-up point of delivery inspection is made where a wholesomeness certificate is issued. Three, during the month of July, August 2004, the Veterinary and Livestock Division of the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries received complaints from four importers, Mr. Speaker, that After a very short period of storage, the chicken acquired from that particular enterprise, Eden Foods, presents quality problems, is not being purchased in some cases, returned by the customers, due to greenish discoloration and apparent spoilage. 4, our technical officers carried out additional inspections at the storage facilities and confirmed the reports. Subsequent inspections at the point of delivery resulted in detention and condemnations of some chicken associated with abnormal organoleptic characteristics, such as excessive reddening and greenish discoloration. It would appear that a backlog experience by Eden Meats allowed for the detection at that point. The following immediate response strategy was instituted to resolve the problem. 1, an immediate inspection of the plant by the veterinary division to establish the status and to make necessary recommendations. The initial findings were such that another joint inspection by the various authorities of the Public Health Department, the St. Lucia Bureau of Standards, and the Veterinary Division, were done of the processing plant, was carried out 1 week later, directed at ensuring that the required sanitary and good manufacturing practices are implemented. At the second visit, some improvement was observed. 2, meetings were held by the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries with the Processors Association and importers to address the situation. So, Mr. Speaker, we've been bringing everybody involved in this to try to help this situation. Reports were written and copied to the proprietor for further action. A follow-up joint inspection of all plants has been carried out. Obvious improvements were observed at Eden Meats. We continue to issue the inspection and wholesomeness certificates as no further quality problems has been presented. That is what happened, Mr. Speaker. We are not victimizing anyone. I myself, Mr. Speaker, have been visiting the farms around St. Lucia and trying to work with the farmers to find ways to get them out of the difficulties. And I will give you, Mr. Speaker, a whole list of the incentives that we have been given to the agricultural sector. Because
the Honourable Member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move for the suspension of Standing Order 32-8. An additional 45 minutes within which to complete his presentation so that we can break for lunch by 2 o'clock.
Honourable Members, the question is that Standing Order 32, sub-order A, be suspended to allow the Honourable Member for Agriculture an additional 45 minutes to make his contribution so that he'll be break for lunch. I now put a question. As many are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Minister, leave is granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Honourable Members, for granting me some more time. Mr. Speaker, sir, so that I was saying that agricultural health and food safety is very important for us at the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And we do everything that we can to continue to instruct our farmers in the right way to do business. But when the business fails, people must not blame it on the ministry. People must take responsibility for the businesses that they operate. The government of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, does not control the factors of production. This is not a communist country where we own all the farms, we own all the estates, and we sit down and plan at a central economy and say, this year we will produce 3 million tons of chicken. We cannot do that. We don't control those factors of production. What we do and what governments do in those types of democracies is to facilitate the environment, is to create the conducive environment by putting the legislative framework, by setting in place the policies, and given the types of fiscal incentives, etc., for the businesses to thrive. And we have gone overboard by doing that, sir. Every week, sir, we get so many persons applying to government who start up farm businesses to give them incentives on all feed, medication, all the implements that they use, the equipment that they use, the beakers, the warmers, everything that you would require in setting up a poultry enterprise or pig enterprise. The government has given duty-free on all of these things. We have done it for the banana industry, and we have caused it to be circulated to all the banana companies, all the incentives that we have given. Just recently, we removed all the duties on a number of things, from the knapsack sprayers right down to the twine that the farmers use in bananas. We've done it with the fungicides, the rodenticides, the fertilizers, the insecticides, respirators, coveralls, rubber boots, ladders, vibrators, guns, knapsack sprayers, blue diathene. All of this we've removed. And then you have people on the other side telling you the cost of production has gone up and a bag of fertilizer is $43. That is the government that's causing it to be $43 when we've removed the duties on it. And if the government had not acted this way, it could have been worse, because we do not control those factors of production, Mr. Speaker. That's the reality. Mr. Speaker, the point is, Mr. Speaker, that we must change the mindset that agricultural production is about just depending on handouts. Agriculture is a business. We as government will do everything we can to give the support to our farmers, because it's done the world over. But we do not have the financial largesse that you would get in Europe or in the United States or in Japan, where the farmers receive all sorts of incentives. We cannot do it this way. So what we have sought to do was to provide an agricultural incentives regime that will, rather than collecting the duty and then having to pay it back as obtained in, say, Trinidad and Barbados, you must first invest into the, you must show your investment, you have to produce for about 1 year, and then you have to file your returns, and the government will give a returns on a graduated basis over a period of time. We don't have the kind of money to do that, Mr. Speaker. We do not have oil. So what we have done, and the Prime Minister captured in his budget, and I have to say he captured very well in his budget presentation, and I have to thank him for doing that, sir, because I have been working hard to see that we get that sort of incentive program for our farmers. And what we have tried to do is to create a system where in the past there's been a lot of abuse, because farmers were given incentives on their motor vehicles, the FAR vehicles. But the customs has had cause to seize a lot of those vehicles because people do not use them for the sole purpose of agriculture. So what we have done is to put in an entry requirement. And again, the member for Miku North was seeking to mislead the House that we had put in a system that you had to have a $100,000 investment so you could benefit. That is not true, Mr. Speaker. All we have done is to say that we are trying to remove all the bureaucracy that every time, it's the same people in the ministry who will be dealing with those documents and making the recommendations to cabinet. And there are some things that are, you know, less than $100,000, maybe a one-off item that might force $1,000, which may not have to come to the cabinet of ministers. And we have, the ministry will have a committee in place comprising of the permanent secretary, the deputy permanent secretary, the director of agricultural services, and a couple other technical persons, so that they will screen the proposal. They will screen the proposal, Mr. Speaker, and then make a recommendation as to whether it should be approved or not. And all of these matters will be forwarded further to the cabinet of ministers. So what we are trying to do, Mr. Speaker, is to give support to our farmers. Sanu kafe, Mr. Speaker. Nu pa vle engage farmer pou fe yo pedita e pou bayo flitwaka pou yo jwen sanu ka bayo pou sipote. Se pa sanu kafe. Nu ka chache pou ede farmer. Se sanu kafe. Ek nu ka di konsa, si ou kaye acheter n'importe bagage. Si c'est irrigation qu'on fait, on peut acheter un petit pompe, on peut ça, en trouver papier, un ministre agriculteur. yo ka regarde document, yo ka ni pou wè ki ou se implanté, ou ni papye se yo. Si se yon loan nou ka pran dan bank pou achete bagay sa la, ou ka prezante enfòmasyon, nou ka yo ka kouye bank lan pou wè si ou komanse fè a bagay. Pis nou pa vle moun sa la ka achete bagay sa la. E ka le fè yon lot zafè pi. Nou vle wè ki pis se si pou nou ka bay agrikòl, ek nou vle wè sa ou ka achete a ka yantouye an zafè a ou ka fè. Pis la li moun ka ni l'abitid ka vin achete bagay pou fè tout kante lot bagay. Mèm kon se FAR la, moun ka servi bagay la pou yo ay fè construction tout bagay kon sa, e ka fè customs ni pou sezi se machin. So, sa nou ka fè, M. Speaker, se pou nou mette an sistem an plas, kote an yen ki an ba yon $100,000, a dan minis agrikol men, an disizyon ka y sa fè, pou sa jwen pli vitman incentiv la ou ka chache. E kan yen ki an ho sa, sa ka y wive douvan kabinet pou fè an disizyon. C'est ça qui a fait là. Now, Mr. Speaker, what we are trying to encourage with this is, for example, we are trying to shift from an agriculture that depended on rain. So we are trying to give incentives to people to put in the irrigation systems that they can procure the new technology of greenhouses, hydroponic systems, that they can have access to all sorts of equipment. People apply to us all the time for duty-free concessions on farm vehicles or refrigerated vehicles for persons who are engaged in poultry production, right? Persons who are involved in pork production. Because, Mr. Speaker, we want to take our agriculture to a higher level. The people in the food business will not risk feeding their customers with products that they are not sure where they come from. They are not sure about the way the food is handled. Yo, we can't continue with the days, Mr. Speaker, of people just having meat hanging all over the place and expect that a serious hotel or a serious person selling food is going to just buy this product without knowing where the product comes from and without knowing that it is producing an approved system of production, that it has received the approval of the Bureau of Standards and the approval of what we call the HACCP and meet HACCP compliance. This is what the incentive regime is trying to do, to get our farmers to take the next level so that we will have world-class, Mr. Speaker. This is what this budget is about. It's about meeting world-class standards because we are preparing our farmers not only for the World Cup, but we are preparing our farmers for the legacy, Mr. Speaker, after the World Cup. And this is the kind of work that we are doing, Mr. Speaker. This is not killing agriculture. This is what this incentive regime is doing. And it is fully compliant with what obtains on the WTO rules. Because, Mr. Speaker, you know the WTO has all sorts of rules that you cannot give incentives here and they have all sorts of things in. So we are finding ways, although we do not have the cash in our pockets, to give it because they say it's only borrow that we borrow, so we don't have the money. So what we're saying, we will give you duty-free concessions up to a certain point. So for example, if you are going to buy a pickup, and we are trying to encourage persons, because numbers are important, you have to get yourself together within a cooperative so you can benefit from the duty-free concessions that the cooperative will receive. That's the associations will be able to get the duty-free concessions and you can buy the products a lot cheaper that way. But if you're going to buy a pickup, for example, the pickup you will have to apply for individually. And so that benefit will be directly to individuals. So, Mr. Speaker, in due course, and as I go about my visits with within the farming community, I will seek to explain further those benefits that we have put in place, this new agricultural incentives regime, to give the support to our farmers in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I said earlier that we had some 40,000 children in schools and that the Banana Emergency Recovery Unit is working closely with the schools towards encouraging our people to consume banana. And Mr. Speaker, there's a thriving market and we have to do everything that we can to encourage our people to produce more bananas for our domestic, not only the export market, but for the domestic market. Because today, Mr. Speaker, never mind all what people are saying and quoting the figures about 42,000 tons were exported. You must know, Mr. Speaker, that in the old days when bananas were exported, it was easy to go around and get a box of bananas everywhere for you to cook at your home. Not anymore, Mr. Speaker. Everything sells on the farm. Those are the changes that have taken place in the economy, sir. Everything sells. So that if you want to get bananas to feed your pigs, the farmers who were cutting back during the leaf spot problem we had, Mr. Speaker, they sell that to the farmers who feed pigs. So they still are able to get a salvage value out of that. The ripeners, there are several ripening rooms around St. Lucia who supply the hotels and the supermarkets and who export to Barbados and Antigua and other parts of the region. Some of that too is not even captured in the official statistics, right? So Mr. Speaker, we have to continue to give the support to the farmers so that we could meet those demands that we have created. Things have changed, times have changed, and so we must. Mr. Speaker, I've already said about World Cup 2007, what we are doing so that our farmers can get world class. But what I should say now, Mr. Speaker, is that there are tremendous opportunities for our farmers to benefit during the World Cup. And our staff at the ministry, as we have done in the past, working closely with the farming community during the Jazz Festival, will continue to do so. And we have a committee in place. We have a committee in place already working, Mr. Speaker, with the St. Lucia Jazz, with the Cricket World Cup Committee. And next year, 2006, we will target St. Lucia Jazz as a test run for our preparation of our farmers for World Cup 2007. That's what we are doing, Mr. Speaker, at our ministry. Now, Mr. Speaker, the linkages between agriculture and tourism. The Oxfam, an international NGO, has been working closely with the St. Lucia Heritage Tourism Program, with the farmers of Bellevue in Soufre, or is it Choiseul, the farmers in Grace Woodlands, and the farmers in the Grace Producers Cooperative, the Bass Producers Cooperative, yes sir, Bass Lagrasse, and those farmers have formed themselves into a cooperative, which the Honorable Minister for Cooperatives mentioned when he addressed this house yesterday. And they have formed themselves into that cooperative and working closely with the Oxfam Group and the St. Lucia Heritage Tourism. And that's what is happening there is they're training those people to be able to work towards supplying the hotel and the tourism sector. That they can work with the yachts people, they can work with the people with the time sharing, the hotel, because our visitors, we have to feed them. Every morning at an hotel, Mr. Speaker, people eat, they must have fresh fruits and vegetables. So our people must be trained to do that. We have been doing just bananas for years, so we cannot wake up just suddenly this morning and expect. And we talk about the food import bill is $500 million and what we are doing about it. This is not how things happen. You have to prepare the ground and you have to train people of meeting the standards and organizing themselves so that they can have consistent quality and supply to those persons. Mr. Speaker, I think we were told about the government is double talking about union and saying one thing about agriculture and doing another thing because we are going to relocate the Union Agricultural Station. Mr. Speaker, and I have said before that some people do not remember these days very well. So we sometimes have to forgive them. But you see, Mr. Speaker, that whole process of relocating the Union Agricultural Station, sir, that had been started many years ago. My information, when I was doing the research at the ministry, that started some 15 years ago. That decision was taken because of the challenges of the changing land use patterns in that particular area, Mr. Speaker. It had first started when, and I remember as a young agricultural cadet at Union, well, I was there after Lucilec had been brought in, but I knew of the coffee fields that were destroyed to put in other activities. I knew of government funding scheme that was brought there, the WASCO across the bridge there, Mr. Speaker. And then, when a particular Minister for Finance could not find $20,000 to give to the Farm Managers Union at the time to drain the area, what did he do? He put two factory shells there.
Yeah.
They're still there. And he comes telling people about we killing agriculture. What was taking place on that strip of land, Mr. Speaker? What was taking place there? What we have done now, we've relocated that activity because another factor, Mr. Speaker, which was and showed that the change was imminent for that area, is again you have this residential development. And if you're doing agriculture and you have polluted waterways caused by the residential developments and household waste going down in what used to be a river, the Shock River, all that environmental degradation took place not 7 years ago, Mr. Speaker, not 7 years ago. So when people are showing concern about agriculture, Mr. Speaker,
forget me.
So, Mr. Speaker, work is well in progress, and the nearing completion, the tissue culture program is being relocated first to Roseau, and we're going to have what we call a new center of excellence, Mr. Speaker, because considerations were made of the Mabuya Valley land or going to cul-de-sac, and both those areas were deemed to be unsuitable because of the high infrastructural cost that you would have had to incur to relocate in the cul-de-sac valley. So that we are going to relocate this tissue culture facility, and now it is going to be even in a better way than it was, now that we've had the experience of being at Union. The next thing that has been said is that farmers will not be able to procure their planting material anymore. Nonsense, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are not closing down the propagation station. That is something that is a progressive development. So farmers will not just arrive tomorrow morning and find that they cannot procure their citrus plants and cocoa, etc. We are managing that well, sir. And as I said, we have our agricultural information division, and we will continue to educate the farmers and tell them what we are doing, because we do that regularly. Mr. Speaker, I think that takes me to the question of leaf spot control. And again, Mr. Speaker, leaf spot control. This government has gone overboard in giving the farmers support for leaf spot control. The farmers can tell you how involved I have been in trying to ensure that they have the materials required. When I caused the Banana Industry Trust to make the funds available, because these days, Mr. Speaker, in trade, people don't give you credit anymore. They want their money up front or no business. So the BIT had to find $98,000 to give to the WIPDECO, that was in August last year, to procure the inputs. Then you had a problem of an industrial action in Trinidad. And what we had to do, I had to call my colleague Minister of Commerce to contact the colleagues in Trinidad to ensure that we fast-tracked the process and did whatever they did to get it out with all the industrial action to land the material there within quick time. And I have to commend the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Commerce for the work that he did in ensuring that our farmers get the materials. So anyway, people telling you about the government doesn't care. Mr. Speaker, I care. Mr. Speaker, the BIT has spent millions of dollars in giving support to irrigation and giving the farmers money for the input and credit scheme, so that we will continue to give that support to our farmers. And the banana farmers have matured and they're understanding the environment a lot better. And so now they have been able to form themselves into a grouping called the St. Lucia, the Pest Services Management Limited, which is a company that is formed to deal with the leaf spot control. And with WIPDECO has signed a contract with that company, this new company formed by the banana companies, to undertake leaf spot control in St. Lucia. That is well on the way, and I will because of the constraints of time, Mr. Speaker, I will not elaborate on it. But again, I will find time during my regular visits to the farmers and through our information division to inform, keep the farmers informed. Mr. Speaker, so this is a government that is concerned and continues to support agriculture. And I myself, Mr. Speaker, I have all the reason to continue supporting the farmers, notwithstanding the fact that my constituency of Castries North perhaps just has one farmer who is into poultry production, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, that's a piece of land. Mr. Speaker, I now turn to the constituency of Castries North, sir. Let me put my face. Castries North, Mr. Speaker. Castries North. I heard people are looking to close down our effort, Mr. Speaker. So meanwhile, they have not shut down our effort in Castries North. I know that we have approached the St. Lucia ANT Ports Authority, Mr. Speaker, because we have a problem with traffic management outside that airport. I have written to the Commissioner of Police because the Ports Police tell us they have no jurisdiction outside of the airport fence. So it means you must have traffic police to manage the traffic out there. And I hope that we will be able to better regulate this traffic management situation. I hope too that SLASPA, now we have this major repairs being undertaken or rehabilitation works being undertaken, that consideration can be given to providing proper parking for patrons of the airport, similar to what is done at Huanora International, because this is a major hazard, Mr. Speaker, of the double parking and all the problems you have there. So I think the time has come for some bit of work to do when the construction work is complete on the inside, that some work can be done in helping to regulate the traffic on the outside. And for those taxi drivers who also depend on the tourism industry, who operate the seaside taxi associations, because everybody must be able to benefit from the opportunities that we get out of tourism. Mr. Speaker, the people in Skate Town and Star City, sir, have benefited immensely from the work of the Poverty Reduction Fund by the new footpath access that we have constructed at Skate Town and Star City. And some of that is still work in progress in Star City. Work over well over $300,000. And Mr. Speaker, have you ever heard of community contracting, sir? Community contracting. No other outside contractors. The people in there have been contracted, and that had provided regular employment for over 6 months in the area, and people no longer have to have three pairs of shoes to get to work, Mr. Speaker. That has changed. Again, this government looking to bring dignity to the people in those communities. And never mind when people tell you that footpaths, and that's not reducing poverty, that's not doing anything to poverty. If you live in those places, Mr. Speaker, you will understand the challenges these people face. And Mr. Speaker, while talking about this project, during the same time, we were fortunate to have the services of one Professor Malcolm Anderson from Bristol University, who is an expert, Mr. Speaker, on slope stability issues. And Mr. Speaker, this gentleman and his able student, Liz Holcomb, have visited those communities and have prepared a model and a model of a show home showing the right things to do. This is what the kind of interventions that this government is about, you know. It's not about quick fixes. We've gone in there, we've made the intervention, educated the people through community meetings. We have a document, you have the posters in the little shops in the community showing the people the right things to do about slope stability management. And so what is going to happen? The Prime Minister announced it in the budget. Where are we going to give assistance and support to persons in finding ways to protect their homes, putting the gutter in and putting in place a new system that is called Star Drainage Systems. That is Skate Town Adaptive Resource Drainage Systems, Mr. Speaker. Skate Town Adaptive Resource Drainage Systems, Mr. Speaker. The Star Drainage Systems, Mr. Speaker. And that's copyrighted, Mr. Speaker. That is the sort of thing that we are doing. And those projects I went myself, notwithstanding that I do not represent the Gabulans, Mr. Speaker. I went there with Professor Anderson myself because we are concerned about all the people of the nation, Mr. Speaker. That is how we're stopping the flood, Mr. Slope stability management, Mr. Speaker. We also, Mr. Speaker, in Castries North, and when in another place, Mr. Speaker, I presented my list, Mr. Speaker, road is well on the way. The roadworks, Mr. Speaker, is well on the way. In Carrily, Mr. Speaker, the Carrily Park Road is well on the way, Mr. Speaker. But that's just a little smile I have because I have so many roads. Castries North has the most roads, has the widest road network in St. Lucia, you know, Mr. Speaker. We have the roads in Le Clery. All the lanes in Le Clery have to be done. And I have been assured by the Honorable Minister for Works that we will see some work happening very shortly. So that some people will stop being mad on the radio programs every morning because I have not repaired the lanes at Le Clery. And we will attend to the Le Clery Square. And also, Mr. Speaker, we have to, because Le Clery is an old town, Mr. Speaker, and it needs a lot of renewal. So there's work under the World Bank Disaster Mitigation Program with the river works at the Le Clery River. We have to undertake this project. That has been taking quite some time, but of course, because the funding agencies do have some very long bureaucratic processes in releasing the funds for those projects. In Citygate, Mr. Speaker, we have to do some road retaining walls to protect the roads that are falling apart along the road, this area. At Bidbutai Road, we heard of the works that will take place along the Castries-Grosley Highway. And finally, we should see protection for the pedestrians who use that route, the old ladies who leave Bize and walk down to church at Le Clery. I hope the Minister of Works will take due notice and ensure that he puts in the sidewalks and he's promised the overhead passes, that is those pedestrian bridges, for the students who attend the Sir Ira Simmons School and the Castries Comprehensive School, Mr. Speaker. And we also have some private interests who would want to work closely with the government in putting a bus shelter. And I hope that the designs will be able to allow us to do that near the Avis gas station and Peter and Company, because there are several hotel workers who reside at Le Clery and surrounding communities and must wait in that area for them to catch the buses. And so we must find some form of protection from the elements for them, Mr. Speaker. At Acteville, Mr. Speaker, we have started already. The government has spent over $80,000 in the acquisition of property from the Goddard family to put a motorable access into that community, which is popularly called Tamarind Heights, Mr. Speaker. And we hope that we will be able to commence. The Ministry of Planning had, and I thank the Minister for assisting us in doing the survey work to align the road so that excavation works can commence very shortly. Mr. Speaker, a lot of traffic is diverted through Le Clery Acteville because persons try to avoid the roundabout. And because of this, Mr. Speaker, it puts a lot of pressure within the community. So that the bridge at the foot of Acteville, Mr. Speaker, I'm pleading again with the Honorable Minister for Works to please give us this little bridge extension so we can have a pedestrian footpath there. Because one of these days, Mr. Speaker, we may have an unfortunate situation. The bridge does not have the capacity for what it was designed many years ago, about in the early 1960s, Mr. Speaker. So we need to get this bridge in place. Now, Mr. Speaker, there's a road at the back of the American drywall leading to the summit near the Begas and Company. And, Mr. Speaker, this road is in a very deplorable condition. The community themselves have started some work in rehabilitating the road, and we will seek to continue. The estimates have been done, and we will see how much support that we can give them in doing this. at. Mr. Speaker, you see, it is not always possible in those sittings, and people always believe that this is where you get allocations for the projects that you want to undertake in your constituency. But I have to tell you, Mr. Speaker, this is not where it happens, Mr. Speaker. You have to work with all your colleagues at Cabinet, and you have to go to their offices and to plead with them. You have to write to them several letters. You have to go to the technical people and take them in your Jeep. Not an SUV, as people are saying, a Jeep that is falling apart, and take them to see all the bad roads and all the drains that we have to do, Mr. Speaker. So that the road behind the Sunny Acres, at Sunny Acres behind the SD Academy, which has been abandoned, I'm pleased to hear the announcement by the Minister for Works that he will attend to this road. The road at Cedars, this lane going to the Sidoni Brothers Gym, Mr. Speaker, is in dire need of repairs, and we must do something about that very shortly. Mr. Speaker, recently the Ministry of Works did some potholing along the road to the Sunfield Summit. The Mondidor Road, Mr. Speaker, the Guakatat Road, again the Minister of Works did make that announcement that the complete reconstruction of that road will be undertaken. Now, Mr. Speaker, sports facilities. We have the multi-purpose court at Laclary, and finally, we have a contract signed with a contractor in the Ministry of Youth and Sports to undertake the rehabilitation work of the court at Laclary. And I believe as we speak, Mr. Speaker, some work should have commenced on the Laclary court. But we also have the court at Mondidor, Mr. Speaker, which needs fencing, because every time the young men are playing up there, Mr. Speaker, the ball is kicked over the fence. Well, not over the fence, it's kicked right into the yard of a gentleman up there who probably has in storage now over 100 footballs and will not release them. So we need to put in the fence so that the boys can continue to play their game without any difficulties. Of course, we are happy with the work from the Ministry of Communications and Works and the Lucilec for they finally giving us the street lights so that the boys at Boapatat Mondidor can play their uninterrupted football way into the night and keep them occupied constructively, Mr. Speaker. So they are very thankful for that. The court, we have a site has been left for the construction, reserved for the construction of a multi-purpose court at AGARD, Mr. Speaker, and we hope that this work, we are still trying to find sources of funding to do it, but we hope we will be able to commence excavation works at least during this financial year. Now the boys at Cedars, who use the multi-purpose facilities belonging to the St. Joseph's Convent, have approached me, and we have written to the St. Joseph's Convent to see how we can undertake this project in collaboration with the Ministry of Youth and Sports so that we can have a joint venture with the community and the St. Joseph's Convent in rehabilitating the court and possibly putting some street lights over the court so the young men... Yes. So we have done some work in the vicinity of a retaining wall just on the sidewalk facility. So this is work that we are concerned about all the youth, but as you know, Mr. Speaker, we cannot deliver to everybody, Mr. Speaker, at the same time. And we are I'm very grateful to my constituents for understanding and the patience in what we are trying to do for them. But Mr. Speaker, we have also in the entire community, Mr. Speaker, we do not have a human resource development center. And Mr. Speaker, it concerns me because except, for example, at Laclary where people have access to the Vidbutai Cultural Club or the Parish Center at Laclary, but the residents of Upper Lapanse, the residents of Mondidor, AGARD, and even Bokash, Mr. Speaker, so what we're hoping to do is a joint venture between Castries East and Castries North. Mr. Speaker, we work very closely in the Castries Basin, Mr. Speaker. So that I have been working, in support of my colleague from Castries East by also getting, I've written to the Minister for Physical Development, Environment and Housing so that he can deploy his surveyors because we have identified a parcel of land so that we can begin initiate the process of acquisition. So very shortly, we can acquire the land and at least by the next time we come to the House, that the Minister for Finance can give us something that we can commence a new human resource center that will, as a joint venture between Castries North and Castries East. And we hope that the Minister for Social Transformation will be kind enough to give us the support, Mr. Speaker. The Castries Coalition, Mr. Speaker. The Castries Coalition. So, Mr. Speaker, we have, there's a lot that we have to do. At the foot of Acteville, the road going to Tina and others in the area, I have spoken to the Castries City Council, and we're hoping to see what support we can get for them in trying to improve the access to that area. So there's a lot to do, Mr. Speaker. Much has been done. I will not name every street light that we have put in the constituency, but we have spent well over $60,000, Mr. Speaker, in the last financial year in putting street lights for residents in Castries North. And Mr. Speaker, the people are very happy to get their street lights because this is they have serious security issues. And when the hotel workers, Mr. Speaker, are returning home at night, they want to feel comfortable and they can see that where they're going to. And this is what we are trying to do in all the communities. We are children of the light, Mr. Speaker, and we continue to spread the light all over the constituencies that we represent, Mr. Speaker. So that we the Nicollet Hill at Leclerc, Mr. Speaker, and the Leclerc Square, and you will have seen if you drive along the Bidwater Road, and I have to thank my colleague Minister for Communications, Work, Transport and Public Utilities for this lovely footpath that we have, the sidewalk, Mr. Speaker, from the Vidbutai Road into Leclerc. And we hope that we can continue this project right into Leclerc to the church and along the drive through near the NRDF to the Cara Suites, because now that the traffic, and thank God, Mr. Speaker, again, good representation, sir, that we had the vision to create this new access from Leclerc through to La Panse. Today, when the Ministry of Works had to shut down to stop the flooding in Castries, and so we have the access through La Panse. People can now have an escape route through La Panse into Leclerc. And people take it for granted. That jar has done nothing. But, Mr. Speaker, the road is there. Everyone is using it. Now it has created a problem because of the traffic diversion. So we are looking to increase the capacity of the road and to improve the drainage systems along that road. So just before Easter, we had a bit of the work done. And we hope that we can continue. Every time we get some of the crumbs from the Ministry of Works, we will do a little piece on it, on the drainage along that route, sir. So we are trying our best to serve the people of Castries North and to attend to all their needs. Another very important thing we have done in light of the traffic diversions we are trying to do when the roadworks begin on the Castries-Grosley Highway. We now have this new route because of the relocation of the residents of Black Malay and so on at Kareli. And the site is ready for people to construct, but the access route into the community is now under construction, and it will now provide a new route, Mr. Speaker, and will also serve a community that was lost completely. Everybody had forgotten them. There's a little route there between Kareli to Mondidong. And that road will serve all those residents. It will also provide a new access for residents of Agard who want to run down to the shopping mall, or residents of Kareli who want to take their children to school at the Dampil at Luizi, or want to access the mall, or want to get out of Castries without coming through Castries or through Bocage. So now you have a route where you can go through Kareli, Mondidong Road, through Bocage, through the General Gap, Old Victoria Road, through Daegu. This is the sort of thing that the Ministry of Works has been doing in upgrading the new road to Kashmir Southeast. So all the linkages, Mr. Speaker. So excellent work. And the residents are very grateful. So, Mr. Speaker, things are happening in Kashmir North. We also shortly should see the construction this year of the headquarters in the old Bize quarry of the National Emergency Organization. And of course, what we are trying to do with the land use in there, it is the last bit of crown property that remains. And to avoid all the squatting, we will change the landscape in there, Mr. Speaker. We have found space for the people with disabilities, the National Council for People with Disabilities. The government has given them some over 10,000 square feet of land where they will locate the headquarters. You're going to have the Kashmir North Disaster Committee's satellite warehouse. And then in the quarry, you're going to have this new, brand new headquarters for NEMO. And there's another facility up there, Mr. Speaker, in Bize, which I hope to negotiate with the owners to see whether we can convert that into a human resource center so that the people in the community can have somewhere to hold their activity. This road to the quarry, Mr. Speaker, Bize Quarry, and I think the Minister for Works has announced also that the Basic Needs Trust Fund has signed the contract with WASCO to deliver the water project to those people. Mr. Speaker, you believe that in 2005, sir, that people in Kashmir, and my friends tell me that you are in Kashmir, you do not need anything. People in Kashmir do not have pipe-borne water, Mr. Speaker. As an interim measure, Mr. Speaker, what this representative did was to get WASCO to put in a standby as a temporary measure until the pipeline is delivered. Mr. Speaker, the people of Abamon will also get their water very shortly, and a new tank will be placed at the top of Mondidon to service the people of Abamon. And of course, the PRF staff and the BNTF staff have been dialoguing with the community. And this is the way we do our business, and the representative has been meeting with the community and letting them know what is taking place. So, Mr. Speaker, there is still much to do. Still much to do, Mr. Speaker, in Kashmir North. And I hope that the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Works will be gracious unto us this financial year and ensure that we can continue to deliver to the people of Kashmir North as we bring the light of the star to everybody in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like to commend this budget presented by the Honorable Minister for Finance and our Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank my colleagues for the support they have given me during my tenure those past years. And the staff of the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, for all the good work that we are trying to do for our farmers in St. Lucia, particularly our Agricultural Information Division, and also our staff, all the staff of the Poverty Reduction Fund worked so very well and so very hard with the people of Star City and Skate Town to deliver the people out of having so many pairs of shoes to get in and out of their homes during the rainy season. That is no more, Mr. Speaker. That is history. It has brought employment to the people. It has brought a certain degree of dignity to the people. And now their friends once can visit them without having any embarrassments of going through the mud. And of course, Mr. Speaker, I have to thank Professor Anderson and Liz Holcomb of Bristol University for all of the work that they're doing in St. Lucia to help our people out of the challenges that we face in those communities. Yes. And that is a very commendable program, which it shows what can happen when you empower people. And so that the young man, for example, Robert in Skate Town, and Mr. Ignatius and all these people in the community, in the committee up there, can now go to Tououge to teach and share the experiences with the people of Tououge. You know, Mr. Speaker, this is how we work in government, Mr. Speaker. So you see, we go around and we exchange those the community empowerment, the communities go out and exchange the ideas and teach other communities on the successes of what they have done in those communities. That is what we are doing, Mr. Speaker. And of course, the program is being extended into Castries Central, and we will be sure by the next time we will have no more floods in Castries Central, Mr. Speaker. That matter will be taken care of once and for all by the drainage system of Mosaic. Star drainage systems, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you for your patience, and I want to thank my colleagues, and I want to encourage every St. Lucian, Mr. Speaker, to eat what we grow and to support our farmers. And also, I tell you, the people in the city areas, to at least grow a little something for yourselves. But please support our farmers and our fishers. I know the Honourable Member for Ancillary and Canneries has done much to explain all the issues of fisheries. But one more area, Mr. Speaker, that to do with fisheries is about safety at sea. And the government spends a lot of money every year to mobilize the regional security system, to mobilize the defense forces, the search and rescue operations. And I want to urge and I want to plead with the fishers to always remember about safety, because they have the gear. And there was an example, Mr. Speaker, of a gentleman who went missing. And a couple, after a year, when he was not found, his locker was opened. And lo and behold, Mr. Speaker, all his safety equipment was in the locker, Mr. Speaker. And that is what our fisheries department is working so hard to do. And I have to thank, that is one of the best departments, Mr. Speaker, I risk saying that, in the ministry. These people, we have a lot of the scientists in there and go around and help our farmers and teach them of the fads and all this. And this year, I will continue, along with my colleague, the parliamentary secretary, to go visiting the fishers around St. Lucia to understand their problems and to see how we can continue to support them. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you and I want to commend and support the appropriation 2005-2006.